You are listening to Barrel Roll, the official podcast of WingDamage.com. Hello and welcome to Barrel Roll, the official podcast of WingDamage.com. This is episode 143 and I am your host, Jonah Gregory, and with me tonight is Jesse Gregory.
Hello.
The one and only co-host tonight.
Yeah, well, it's a holiday weekend. Everybody's probably in some sort of food-induced coma.
This is true. Sure, it's a few days later.
For the next several days,
yeah.
I would only imagine.
Exactly. So we kind of pushed it back last minute, assuming everyone would be too busy on Friday night anyway. And then I assume everyone is too busy tonight. I kind of just didn't even want to bother people.
Yeah.
Because most people are out traveling and whatnot. So just the two of us tonight.
Just the two of us.
Yeah, everyone's favorite.
Gonna make it if we try.
So anything new and exciting?
I had some amazing hard drive noises that seem to have temporarily fixed themselves for now. Much like my Xbox. I have a lot of electronics that kind of heal themselves. Like Adam's 3DS. I guess there's just a slew of self-healing electronics lately. They've really got the nanobot technology down.
Yeah, he must have accidentally included some when he sent you that Monster Hunter iPhone case.
Yeah, they must have just snuck their way into my computer. But it came up. It was my week to do the remix competition again, because it's every 3 weeks. And, of course, the first, like, the weekend portion, which is normally when I get the, you know, vast majority of my work done, was right when King of Fighters came for a few. So
right.
I didn't really do anything on the remix until I was going to start Monday, and then I turn on my computer, and it's like it's been doing this thing where it kind of, like, buzzes, but I can turn it on, let it boot up, and then reboot it, and then it'll stop. But this time it did like a way more horrifying noise. And of course I left my external at work, so then I had to wait. I had to wait a day and play some Skyward Sword.
Terrible.
And yeah, so terrible. And then by the time I finally got everything situated, then I had to run a bunch of backups and so I really only had, like, 2 days or something to actually work on music, and I ended up submitting some barely finished thing that I didn't really feel very good about. And then people were like, hey, this was actually good. If it was finished, I would have voted for it. I'm like, damn it. I actually had somebody specifically say that. I was like, oh, damn it. Only I had actually spent, like, bought out a little extra time to try and finish that.
Yeah.
But, oh well, I mean, it's just a remix competition for fun. It's not for money or anything.
Yeah, if only. No. Yeah, so, well, that's too bad. Yeah, my hard drives have been acting funky, like, for a while, and I assume it's my main one because it's the older one, and it's like every time I think it's going to die, then I clear a bunch of crap off of it, and then it stops, like, being horrible. So it's like, for some reason, it's when it gets really full. I don't know why, but that's when it always wants to give me issues. So,
huh.
Yeah, it's weird. But anyway,
that was the week's excitement.
It's so exciting of a week. So let's get into the new games coming out, because there's so many. We better get through them.
Speaking of excitement...
Right, so Mario Kart 7 is for 3DS coming out Sunday,
yeah.
So that looks pretty fun.
Yeah, it's another Mario Kart, so yeah. I mean, I pretty much end up owning all of those.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I haven't decided whether or not I'll buy it right away or if I'll
I'm definitely wait. Not getting it right away.
Might
so.
See if there's any crazy sales going on in the near future. I'm not exactly hurting for games at the moment.
That's the thing. Yeah, it's like I'm not even I have so many things I'm in the middle of that are really big games that I'm just like, I can't justify getting a game that is like the only time I'm going to play it is multiplayer, because that's pretty much what I did with the last one.
It has some cool sounding like community features. Like I know, if you want to play with friends, you know, obviously you can just do the friends list, but I guess there's a, like you can create online communities and then you just have, there's just like a passcode for it, but you enter it once and then you're connected with like all the people in that community.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you can be in multiple communities too, so you're not like locked into one. So it sounds like they're trying to kind of get the whole online part like a little more in depth, which I mean, I remember when the Wii one came out, it was definitely one of the better like Wii online experiences, even though those aren't typically great.
Yeah. Well, even the DS one had that online connectivity, but it didn't have much to it. You know, it was just
that was pretty bare bones.
Random race connection, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll be fun. I hope the blue shell is toned down a little bit.
Sounds like it, at least in hard mode, I've been hearing it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
I think it was Chris Kohler posting that easy equals easy, normal equals easy, hard equals easy, but you get hit with a blue shell on the finish line.
Sounds about right.
So it'll definitely sounds like one I would only be having a lot of fun with friends.
Yeah. I did hear one of the returning tracks was the airship level for DS one, which is was probably pretty much one of the coolest tracks. The DS one was the king of cool track design.
Oh yeah, that's my favorite version of the game.
So I'm really interested to see like what kind of tracks are in this one. I was kind of disappointed with the track design in both the Wii and the GameCube one.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I like I said, I will end up with this game at some point.
Sure.
I'm hoping that the new tracks will be more like the DS one. Like the DS one, I mean, it had the clock level, airship level, had all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah, I put a lot of time on that one.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Yeah, and then the Windows version of Assassin's Creed Revelations comes out this week. There's actually almost nothing coming out this week. It's really weird. Nano Assault was pushed back, which we talked about last week.
The official site apparently says it has it listed for a Thursday, which is like, what?
Yeah, that's weird.
But anyway, yeah, that's supposed to come out this week.
Yeah, and then APB Reloaded, which is All Points Bulletin, which was a MMO made by the guys that did Crackdown, and it horribly, horribly flopped, and then it came out that there was like, you know, some big contention between, I guess, the studio and the publishers or something along those lines. So anyway, they shut it all down or whatever, made it free to play in the meantime and reworked the whole game, and now it's coming out again. So that's what that is.
Do you know like much about it?
Nope.
That
I know the story and that's it. I played the version that came out because I think I got into the beta or something, and it was pretty bad of the other version. It definitely felt like Crackdown, but it seemed like the aiming was like the worst thing ever, and you couldn't really switch effectively between driving and walking because it was like the shooting and stuff, those controls worked fine. It seemed like you couldn't map things properly. Like you were supposed to be able to map them like for walking and shooting and then also for driving, and I think the problem was I tried using a controller because the driving was the worst thing ever on a keyboard, as you would imagine.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, I'll just use a keyboard or a controller because I have that wired Xbox controller. And for some reason, it was like I couldn't map things right or something. So neither really felt good at that point. And, you know, even at its best, it still felt pretty crappy. Like it felt like a really old open world game, like, you know, an old GTA game, so aiming, you know, except that you're fighting another person that's running around like a crazy man that's jumping and trying to dodge your bullets. So it was basically every time I got in a firefight, it was just me and the person I was trying to shoot, like running and jumping like crazy people with terrible aiming mechanics, so no one could ever hit each other.
That sounds pretty amazing.
It just felt like every time you got a kill, it was just pure luck of whose bullet just magically happened to hit the other person first.
Huh.
So it was pretty bad. But that's it. Like, I don't see any other releases listed. I looked right before the show again and still didn't really see anything else.
Yeah, well, I think all the holiday stuff, like, all of it pretty much was October and November. Like, those 2 months were absurdly ridiculous. It's not that we're hurting on games or anything.
No,
they just put them all in those 2 months, and now it's like, go play those games.
Yeah, and I don't know what else all is coming out by the end of the year, other than the Old Republic is.
Every game I can think of that's like upcoming is 2012.
Yeah, Old Republic is December 20th, and I know that's like the last one I'm planning on getting, because there's just too many games right now. But I don't even know if there is anything else, like,
I don't know.
Between now
the
and
next
then.
Few podcasts will just, it'll be tumbleweeds.
It'll
the,
be a lot of what we're
section.
Playing, and those will probably be a lot of the same things.
So strap in,
get in depth with me fighting dragons, because that happened. Alright, well, I guess we have a couple news items, so let's get into that. So, big shocker, GameStop doing something people don't like. this is actually from GameStop Canada. They're going to be getting rid of the used game section, and by that they mean putting the new and used games on the same shelves to make it extra confusing, and they'll both be white stickers now.
Well, so the thing that's like the most sleazy about all of it, and I guess there's a lot of different Canadian GameStop employees writing in to Kotaku saying that yes, that we can confirm that this is true and even already in effect in some stores. The sleaziest part was that I guess the memo was also saying that they're instructed to basically put the new copies of games behind all of the used copies of games on the shelf.
Yeah.
So it's like, in order to actually find a new copy of a game on the shelf, you actually would have to dig for it.
Yeah, that's so crazy to me.
Yeah.
But I mean, they don't make any money off new game sales, really. I mean,
exactly.
All their money's in used games, so it's pretty crazy. And pretty crappy for them. Well, it's weird because it's like they get away with things because they're so big, but at some point you got to think publishers are going to just be done dealing with them, you know?
Yeah, it's a very weird situation, especially lately, you know, like with the whole them being able to give out those codes for the like Catwoman thing with
Batman. Yeah, like defeating the purpose of it being DLC and stuff.
Right. Yeah, it's getting pretty crazy. I don't actually know how much more I have to add on that.
That's that. And then this one you should take. It's music related.
Oh, yeah. So there was it's actually officially through Overclocked Remix, but there's a new 25th anniversary Zelda album that was actually put together by a bunch of indie game composers. It's got a bunch of different people, like the guy who worked on Minecraft, the guy who did soundtrack for V with the 6Bs. It's got the girl from Plants vs. Zombies, and it's got just a bunch of people. Also, Big Giant Circles who did some work on Mass Effect 2 and has been a pretty big, you know, person on Overclocked Remix for years and years.
Mm.
It's completely free, like all the Overclocked Remix stuff. You can just get it on ocremix.org. I'll have a link to the official site for it. And you should definitely go download it. There's a lot of really interesting arrangements of Zelda music from just kind of throughout the entire series. I mean, they even have, you know, stuff from some of the portables like Link's Awakening and Oracle of Seasons. So some of the less covered stuff as well.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think there's even like one Skyward Sword song on there, even though that game like just came out.
Crazy.
But yeah, definitely go download that. There's a little write-up on our site, and you can just find it at ocremix.org.
Cool. All right, that's all we have for news. So, yeah, I guess we will splice in a song right here, and then we'll come back and talk about what we've been playing. Back to back and spinning on it back. Back to back on the turntables back. Back to back and spinning on it back. Back to back on it back. Let's talk about what we've been playing then. Okay, so I guess you can lead with King of Fighters because that's like the one that only you've played.
Okay, yeah, like I said, King of Fighters 13 came... Now it would... By the time this episode comes out, it'd be like 2 weekends ago. But anyway, yeah, I played the hell out of that.
You beat it?
Yes, several times.
Fighting game, you see.
Yeah, I get that. I get jokes. No, I did actually get the beat it on very hard achievement on that game, which I was pretty happy about.
How many tries did that take?
Not too many, because the one of the things about, and this is not specific to King of Fighters 13, this has been in a lot of King of Fighters, I think even some other SNK games, but it has that thing where if you lose, you can in arcade mode, you can replay the battle with like a perk.
Huh.
Which, like I said, is totally not a new thing at all. It's been in a bunch of really old SNK fighters.
I guess I just don't remember that as being a thing.
Yeah, well anyway, it's in this too, which is good because I never would have beaten those end bosses on very hard.
What did Perk do?
It was like drastically reduce their health. So it's
what
like
the heck?
It's like a total like I have the achievement, but it like
still
really
gives you the achievement. Really,
yeah, it totally shouldn't. Like they should make it so that the beating it on very hard mode is like without like losing or without using a perk, because they're optional. Like,
right,
you don't have to choose a perk.
You don't have to be a big fat cheater, but it helps.
Exactly. Well, the thing is like when it comes to SNK bosses,
oh god, they're the worst.
They are big fat cheaters. So,
yeah,
like,
so you might as well, right?
I totally don't mind.
Yeah,
giving in and using the perks if I lose. Well, when I lose,
It's weird how like all fighting game bosses suck, right? But
theirs
seem to be the worst.
Yeah, SNK has a very like talented team of people who can make just the worst bosses ever.
Yeah, they just make you hate playing fighting games ever again.
Yeah, well, like there's two of them, right? So like you get through arcade mode or story mode actually, and you fight one really annoying boss, and then you get to fight another one.
Yeah.
So the first boss is super annoying because he has like two different moves that immobilize you for way too long, so the pacing of the fight is completely awful.
Yeah.
So one of them, he's like picks you up off the ground and slowly punches you, which takes like a full 3 seconds, which in like fighting game time is like an eternity.
Yeah, definitely.
And he just keeps doing it. And then he also has like a distance move where he can like trap you in this thing and then slowly walk up to you and then potentially lift you up and slowly punch you. And then the boss after that has like strings of projectiles. Like I think he can fire like kind of two or maybe even three in rapid succession, and like he doesn't really seem to have any limit to how much he can do that. So that is awful. So yeah, the bosses, worst thing ever. The actual game, pretty good. I mean, fighting game bosses are just kind of always terrible. That's just kind of a fact that we've come to accept, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the actual game is quite good. It remedies the problem that 12 had of not having any modes at all.
Yeah, that was weird.
It was very weird because 12 came out 2 years ago, and I actually reviewed that one as well. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed the fighting system. Like, it was a fun fighter to play mechanically, but the only single player mode it had was, which was called Arcade, was just like a 6 fight time attack.
Right.
And
yeah.
That was it. That was all you had if you were going to play single
player.
It was
fun when you played multiplayer, but yeah, there was nothing to do with single player.
Well, fun when you played local because the online was hopelessly
right, bad. Right. That's I was talking about that. I forgot that it even had online because I don't think we ever got a match working when I was there.
The online in 12 was just completely unplayable. But 13 has it has an arcade mode that's a real arcade mode,
Gas.
It has a lot more fights in it, and for better or worse, it has bosses at the end. It has little skippable dialogue things between all the characters, and there's unique ones for every single combination of characters, which was kind of impressive. In addition to that, it also has a time attack mode, a survival mode, a story mode, a mission mode where you can do, try out different combos and whatnot. It's actually got a lot to do when you're playing alone.
Right.
What 12 desperately needed.
Yeah, for sure.
It's kind of weird. Some of them are just staples. Survival is exactly what you think it is. Time attack is exactly what you think it is. Story is weird and feels kind of unnecessary because, the arcade mode already has a few skippable cutscenes and the dialogue, before the fights and whatnot. And then there's the full on story mode, which has these extra cutscenes and stuff. But the actual fighting that you're doing in the story mode doesn't really seem to have anything to do with what's going on in these cutscenes. And the cutscenes mostly involve non-playable characters. And it just seems really awkwardly put together. It's it has a couple branching paths, but most of them are just choose one of these three things, and then we'll play that set of cutscenes while you do fights that are pretty much the same no matter what you choose.
Weird.
The story mode, it has some cool art in it, I'll give it that, but as far as how it's put together, it seems like the cutscenes and the gameplay are, it seems like they're completely unrelated almost until the very, very end when you just fight the bosses and watch a cutscene that's already in arcade mode anyway. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just it's cool that it's there, I guess, but it feels kind of like arcade mode makes it obsolete and this is just a more, much weirder version of that. It's kind of a little bit nonsensical. The online was kind of hit or miss. I noticed when I tried to play as many online matches as I could, which is kind of difficult to do pre-release, because the only other people that are going to be playing it are other people that are reviewing it.
And they're awesome like you, right? You're bragging?
Yes.
That's what some people claim if you talk about reviews. Sorry.
Okay.
I don't know if you'd heard that before, but...
I see. Well, I mean, it's pretty relevant to the online experience that I had.
Sure.
Since one would be testing with a bunch of...
Oh, I'm not claiming that people on the internet are smart, by the way.
Anywho, so most of the people I played were just completely random, but then I was able to actually... communicate with another guy that was reviewing it so that I could also play in a more controlled, environment.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my experience as far as lag was completely across the board. I had at least one match that had completely no lag whatsoever, and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the matches, though, I played were... kind of like they felt like, you know how those old Street Fighters, you could set the speed settings?
Yeah.
It was set like a few notches down from like the normal game, but it wasn't like choppy. And then, interestingly enough, the controlled environment I played in was the most laggy of all, which was a bit weird. So yeah, my online experience was actually completely across the board. It definitely better than 12, though, because 12, like, you could not get a match that worked, you know, that wasn't really choppy and unplayable.
Yeah.
And also in 12, the menus were set up, like, really terribly unintuitive. And the menus in 13 are pretty similar to what you'll find in, like, Street Fighter 4 and whatnot. They're pretty quick. I mean, you just go to, like, a ranked match or a player match, and there's not a lot of fuss. You can get right in, and you can also play arcade mode or practice mode while you're waiting for other players, which is always really nice. You know, Street Fighter had a similar thing with the fight request system.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I always love that. I hate like sitting around just waiting for somebody to show up.
So
that was especially convenient, you know, considering the lower volume of people that were playing at the time. But yeah, as far as the actual like fighting systems and whatnot, it's got a lot of cool stuff going on. There's about a million different cancels you can do. So basically, you know, it has like multiple power gauges going on, you know, for doing supers and whatnot. And assuming that you have all the required, you know, power built up in those various gauges, you can cancel like almost anything, which is pretty nuts. But there's, you know, there's a lot of rules to it. So like if you want to cancel a special move for another special move, like you can't cancel it with the same special move. And also you need to have the first one actually hit. So you can't just like, oh, I missed with that one, now I'm going to cancel halfway through and do another one. You can't do
that.
Oh,
gotcha.
You can't do that with at least not with the low level cancels. But what you can do, and this is like this is actually the same example that like the tutorial mode teaches you how to do. Oh yeah, by the way, there's a tutorial mode.
That's always helpful.
It it has you do an uppercut, and then like as soon as the uppercut hits, do like, you know, one of those hurricane kick style, you know, half circle back kick moves. So you basically, you know, get to just do increasingly devastating combos by canceling a bunch of moves, you know, kind of midway through and stacking another move on top of that. But it gets really ridiculous because as you are getting into the higher and higher level ones, you know, you could be canceling like super special moves for other super special moves into like the super duper special move. I mean, you have to have a lot of gauges full to do this kind of stuff and, you know, be pretty tricky with your, you know, all the joystick input that you'd be doing to pull it all off. But
right. You
can do it, and, you know, you can straight up murder people with those kind of combos, and it's pretty nuts. But like in a good way. Like I thought that all the cancel systems were a lot of fun to play around with, and it still has both the evasion rolls and the blowback attacks those were both in 12. Those are still there. So like, you know, if somebody throws a projectile at you, if you do the roll, you can actually roll through it.
Nice.
And again, this was in 12 as well.
Yeah,
so
I remember that.
Like that, when somebody throws a fireball at you and you roll through it and then like punch them in the face, that's got to be like one of the most satisfying things that you can do.
That was amazing.
Just because you're like, yeah, you know that fireball you threw? Yeah, I just went through it. And now you're on the ground. And then it has, you know, those blowback attacks, which were kind of similar to Street Fighter 4's focus attacks, only much quicker and requiring more precise timing, but basically where you hit two buttons right as you're being hit, and then you hit them instead.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
That kind of stuff's always really awesome when you can execute it well.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, the timing's a lot less lenient than like a Street Fighter 4. It's actually, I'd say that's true of a lot of the systems in the game. They require much more precise timings and a lot of that. So it's like, it's nice that the game, especially with the mission mode where there's all these character specific trials where it's showing you all these different combos, it's nice that, you know, that mode is in there where it's like, hey, you know, if you do this move, this chains well into this, and it tells you all these things.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be able to do it. it does have the good sense to have a video of every chain combo that it's trying to teach you, so you can actually, it's not just you look at a wall of arrows and then just cry. Instead, you actually open the menu and hit, I think it's called like demo video, and it will actually show you exactly what that combo looks like when it's performed correctly.
Nice.
And that actually gets you a much better sense of the timing that's required to do it. But it's still not going to be one of those things where, you know, Mr. I'm not very good at fighters can just like watch the video and be like, I could do that. Like, no, you're still going to have a lot of practice involved to actually get, you know, the crazy timing of the combos down, because they require a lot of precision. But yeah, I mean, it's got a lot of pretty sweet systems. I had a lot of fun with it. It has a similar system to, you remember how Street Fighter 4 has, where if you do a regular special, like a Hadouken or something, but you hit two buttons, it'll do like a powered up version of it.
Yeah.
This has that too, but one of the things that's kind of weird about it is it actually takes the same amount of energy as doing like a super special. Whereas like in Street Fighter 4, it was like a segment of a bar instead of a full bar. So it's like you don't use that kind of stuff nearly as often in King of Fighters. You use it a little more deliberately. But, you know, they're still useful in their own right, because, you know, obviously they're a lot easier to pull off. You can pull them off quicker in tighter situations than you would like a super special. I guess I think they're called desperation attacks in King of Fighters 13. Now, there's a lot of terminology to remember in that game.
Yeah.
Forgive me if I don't get every single one of them right.
You don't have a giant chart in front of you that like folds out. It's like it's equivalent of a tech tree from like StarCraft. It just keeps folding out.
I do remember that the ultimate super duper fancy McGee attack is called the Neo Max attack. And one of the things that's really interesting about that is you can actually do it one of two ways. One is that you have like three of the power gauges full and then just do it. Mm-hmm. And then another is that you initiate this other mode where you become all glowy, and then it only takes two power stocks to do it. But the problem is that you have that other gauge, and it will, once, if you initiate that glowy mode, that will, I think it's called hyperdrive, that bar will constantly be going down, so you have like a limited time to pull off the Neo Max, but even though it will be cheaper when you do. And then also you have the whole thing of your opponent being like, he's glowy now, he might be about to do a Neo Max attack on me. So it's like, you can get away with doing those attacks a little cheaper, but there are those repercussions of kind of giving yourself away a little bit and having that hyperdrive bar gradually decrease. But yeah, I mean, between that and like all the modes and having a roster that's probably about, I don't know, probably about 1.5 times the size of the last game, with a lot of characters back in it that I was really bummed that weren't in 12. Like Yuri has always been one of my main characters for the King of Fighters series, and she wasn't in 12, and I was like, oh, well, that sucks.
Yeah, it did seem like there were some big name characters that were missing in that
right,
one.
Right, right. And fortunately, 13 brings a lot of them back, so I was pretty happy about that. But yeah, it's also one of the things I didn't realize right away was that it's not a budget price per se, but it's not a full price either. It's like a weird in between. It's like a $50 game. But yeah, it's like, I mean, unless you're completely like burnt out on King of Fighters or something, it's a really good fighter. It's basically what 12 should have been.
Yeah.
But that exists now, and you know, unless you're completely burned out on King of Fighters or just not a fighting game fan,
or if you skipped 12 because you had heard that it was missing a bunch of stuff. I mean,
right. Yeah, like good. King of Fighters 13, totally worth picking up. I mean, it's a ton of fun to play. I mean, it can be a bit you know, tricky to learn some of those systems, but the tutorial mode at the beginning kind of does a nice job of, you know, teaching you the basics and whatnot. So, but yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. It's a cool fighter, even though it has, you know, terrible bosses and whatnot, but what fighter doesn't?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's cool. I mean, I'm glad to hear that they seem to improve on the last one as far as modes and whatnot. And hopefully they'll get that netcode like more consistent, maybe, or I don't know what that would require at this stage now that the game's out.
I haven't gone back to it since the review. So I'm hoping that they keep up with it a bit and try and, you know, like tweak it to make it so that there's less... So there's more consistency to the good connectivity. Because like I said, I had at least one match that was completely lag-free.
Well, and what's crazy is I actually, now that we're talking, since we've been talking about that, I remember specifically seeing a lot of comments of people saying they didn't buy 12 because they had heard the netcode was broken.
Yeah, I totally don't blame them because it was like hopelessly broken.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of people I think nowadays are used to playing their fighting games online, you know, against people.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, if you don't have... The thing is like fighting games are one of those, you know... Well, I mean, they're becoming more mainstream, but like if you're... Especially if you're one of the more hardcore type of people, you might not necessarily have those people in your area.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, online at that point becomes very important for, you know, since it's a completely competitive style game. I mean, people rarely buy fighting games for the single player.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I totally get that for sure.
Exactly. So I forgot about this. I was going to add it to the show notes for the news part, and I totally forgot. I'm sure you saw this, but someone put every book from Skyrim, the ones that are in the game that you can pick up and read, someone made a file that you can download to your Kindle or iPad/iPhone and read them all there at your convenience.
Okay. I didn't realize there was a million books to read in Skyrim.
Oh, there's so many. And actually, not that long ago, I remember seeing a post that someone had actually printed out every book from Oblivion and, like, leather-bound them, and it looked like two Bibles, like, duct-taped together. It was ridiculous.
The heck?
There's so many in-game books. Most of them are pretty short, you know? They're only a couple pages.
Yeah.
And since the in-game text is pretty big, it's like, I'm sure on a normal sheet of paper, it'd be like one sheet of paper, but there's just so many of them. It's pretty ridiculous. And a lot of them don't do anything in the book, but... there are certain ones when you pick them up will give you like a bonus to whatever stat they're, you know, like the subject is related to from having picked it up. And then there's actually some that even though they don't necessarily boost a stat, they actually do give you like, they're like a guide to alchemy or something. And they'll actually like tell you things to use to make certain items or whatever, you know, so they're actually useful in that way.
Uh-huh.
But some of them are just entertaining. Like there's even like, a parody of like a romance novel but written in like old English, you know, and stuff.
It's, nice.
Like, it's pretty amusing. So I remembered seeing that because I know SideQuesting posted a link to it, and I actually did download it to my Kindle because I couldn't resist because it was too funny that it exists. And I told you this story before the show, but I felt like repeating it here rather than getting into, you know, Skyrim stuff that's about how the game works. We've already done that, but anecdotal stuff is always funny. So I was on my way to a quest and I'm like wading through a river and I see a dragon flying overhead. So I'm like, okay, I need to get to shore so I can fight this guy. And he wouldn't land. I'm like, oh man, this is making it really hard to fight him, you know, cause like then you're just, I'm my wizard guy. So I'm just shooting like ice missiles at him and he was flying away and stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go farther inland, right? So that he'll have to land. And as I'm going up the side of this hill, this guy runs up to me, like an NPC runs up and is like, hey, you have to take this item for me. And my options are like, and what? Or, you know, something like that. So I'm just like clicking through because this dragon is right on my tail. And all of a sudden, the entire screen is like engulfed in flames. And so he's essentially like roasting us both alive as this guy won't stop talking to me. So I'm like trying to skip the dialogue as fast as I can. Because I'm like, I don't care about your stupid side quest right now. I'm fighting a freaking dragon.
Also, we're on fire.
And we're both on fire. And I didn't know if it would like not hurt me because I was in, you know, talking to a guy. And so it finally lets me out of it. And he immediately just falls over dead. Like the second the dialogue ends,
he's like, please don't stop talking to me or I'll die.
And then I'm almost dead, so I hurry up and switch to healing. So I'm healing and trying to run away, and then I'm like, then he kind of like flies away a little bit, because you know they kind of circle you as you're fighting them. And so then I'm like, okay, I'm all healed up. And then I get attacked by a pack of wolves, like, out of nowhere. So I'm just like, what the heck? So I'm fighting all these wolves. And then I start running back to the dragon. And another guy stops me. And he's like, did you see where that guy went? He totally stole this weapon from me. So I'm just like, yes, here's your damn weapon. Just leave me alone. I'm fighting a dragon. And then I went and killed the dragon. It was just so weird. Like... How these some things in the game totally like will acknowledge that there's other things going on in the world. Like if the dragon happens near a town, a lot of times the soldiers there will actually like start commenting on it and actually help you fight it. But these two doofuses are like so wrapped up in their stupid "this guy stole my weapon" thing that they're like, "Who cares about this dragon attacking me?" It was just really weird, and it was just I found it very amusing because it was just so goofy. Because that game has so many things like that, that just random encounters. And it was just the weirdest time for it to happen.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was my Skyrim anecdote for the week. So I've still been playing that. I did actually play through and finish the 3DS version of Sonic Generations, which you actually played a little bit of, too.
Probably half of it.
Probably about half of it. It's pretty short. I mean, the other one was short, too, but yeah. This one's definitely shorter. There's actually, there's just like the console version, this one has the game broken up into the three, like, eras of Sonic. But weirdly enough, only the first era has three worlds in it. Oh. And all of them only have the two. Like, the other two eras only have two, which is really weird to me.
Weird.
Yeah, so it's actually way shorter even than that one. So you go through just like the other one. You play as classic Sonic and then new Sonic. But the weird thing in this one is it's mostly, like, even the new Sonic is pretty much all 2.5D. It doesn't do the full, like, 3D Sonic type things.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, it makes the two of them feel significantly less different.
Yeah, it just kind of makes it feel like nerfed Sonic and then Sonic with all his moves, essentially, since they play so similarly in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets even weirder, because, like, as I was progressing, then it was like the new Sonic taught the old Sonic how to do the homing dash. So then all of a sudden I could do that as the old Sonic 2, so then they felt even less different.
Yeah, that seems like a really odd choice, considering they already had, you know, less differences than they had that, and it's just,
yeah.
It seems like they're just kind of slowly melding into the same Sonic.
Exactly, it was weird. Like, the level design was still pretty good. I liked how Casino Zone was one of them in this game.
Yeah, that was one of the ones I actually got to play.
Yeah, and that one was fun. It's just weird because, like, the old school Sonics seems like the point of it is that the levels are a little bit more, like, you can explore them a little bit more and stuff, whereas the new Sonic stuff with the 2.5D always felt like you're just running really fast, and then if you can twitch jump at the exact right moment, then you'll get on the other paths.
Right.
Which I kind of got the same feeling in the PS3 one when we played that one, that because the new ones, I don't know, they always try and make it fast, but it seems like at the expense of the levels actually having anything interesting happen. And, like, newer Sonic games in general, I mean.
Right.
This one, it seemed like, was trying to alleviate that a little bit. And they did it pretty well. I mean, I don't expect the levels to be as big and stuff on a portable, even though the 3DS is more powerful than, say, if it were a DS game.
Right. They definitely seemed like smaller levels than the console version.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the 3D one, or the modern Sonic.
Yeah, and what's also weird is, like, when I was playing the PS3 one, because they rate you at the end, you know?
Yeah.
And this one, it was like, I was pretty much getting all D's on classic Sonic, and then I got, you know, A's and B's and stuff on the new Sonic, because those ones are mostly just about speed and stuff. So, I mean, it plays pretty well, like, for a Sonic game. Like, nothing felt weird, like Sonic 4 or anything, you know?
Yeah, even when I played it, like, the first thing I did was move, like, started running and then let off just to make sure that I kept, you know, some momentum, and I did, so.
Yeah.
Because that was the big thing with Sonic 4, is if you let off the D-pad at all, he would just, like, stop.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Completely stop. No momentum whatsoever.
And exactly.
It was pretty terrible.
And the thing in the console version that kind of gave it some longevity was those challenge levels. And this one handles things a little differently. Like, And this one, I don't know exactly what was unlocking them, to be honest with you, but I did a few things, and then there's just like a giant menu on the titles, or on the, you know, the main menu screen that's missions, and as you unlock them, there's 100 of them, and they'll appear in there. And they're the same idea as a lot of the ones that were in the console one, where it's like, you know, get it so many rings in this amount of time, or kill this many enemies in this amount of time, and you just like go for a good rating, and you'll unlock things from doing that.
How was the actual stages themselves, though? Because, like, one thing that was nice about the console one was that a lot of those challenge stages made completely new stages out of reused assets. Not all of them, but there were a decent number of them that, you know, they'd use the same, like, base level assets for the world, but they'd, you know, use the building blocks of it to actually build new stages out of it for some of those challenge stages. Like, did you encounter any of that in 3DS?
I only got to play one of them so far.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
And I have only unlocked maybe 4 or 5 of them, honestly, so I don't know if I have to go back and replay levels or something to get more of them unlocked. I was kind of unclear. It just seemed like arbitrarily I would suddenly unlock one.
Also, I was wondering, I didn't notice this when I played. Did it have the secret like red rings hidden in the levels?
I didn't notice, honestly.
Because that was another thing in the console version. Every level for like both Sonics had their own like set of.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
I think,
you're right.
I think 5 hidden red rings in every level?
You know, I totally forgot about those. No, there's nothing like that I've seen. Like, if there are, it must be from replaying things, because I haven't replayed any levels yet.
That's kind of sad, because that was one of the things that made exploring, like, it kind of drove you to do more exploring in the console version.
I totally forgot about those, yeah.
Because you're like, hey, maybe if I go on this path, I'll find one of those crazy red rings.
Which shows you that there isn't them, or else I would have remembered that they exist, because they would have been prominently displayed.
I certainly don't recall seeing them when I played.
Yeah, the other thing that was definitely changed was in this one, the Chaos Emeralds are just at the end of each level. You go through end of each world, you go through the Act 1 and Act 2 as the different Sonics, and then, or, you know, one each.
Right.
And then the last one is, it's basically the half pipe bonus level type of thing from Sonic 2. But instead of getting to the end, it's like you're chasing the Emerald, so you use you're always new Sonic so that you have the boost button, essentially, because that's the big difference.
Oh, yeah.
So you basically, you collect these orbs, and dodge the mines, and you try and zoom as fast as you possibly can and get it. And those actually were pretty easy. Like, almost every single one of them I beat the first try. And then they actually kind of introduced some harder things to dodge near the end. But, this one definitely difficulty seemed toned down even not that the other one was that hard, but this one definitely felt like they were expecting it to be played by kids, you know, like, not that kids are like, you know, not into games that are hard or something. It's like, I think that's kind of a misconception, like, on developers' parts, that it has to be super easy or something, because, I mean, when we were kids, we were playing Mega Man, so.
And Mike Tyson's Punch-Out,
so it's always weird when it's like, this game's for kids, so let's make it way too easy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, then that always makes me worry that they're going to just try and make the difficulty spikes in bosses and stuff and make it, like, not fun anymore. So it's a weird balancing act. This one, the bosses were not terrible. I mean, they weren't... I don't know. I've never really liked bosses in Sonic games, honestly. They've always been a low point to me.
Even the Genesis ones, the bosses are the worst part of the game. I mean, they're like, fine, but
you get to Metal Sonic. I hate that guy so much.
Yeah.
Because you have to hit him in, like, that one pixel on his forehead or something. It's really weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, this one, it has... the bosses are always a race, so it's just like in the other one, you race Metal Sonic, then Shadow, and then Silver, and then that's followed up with a boss fight. And those weren't too difficult. They were just kind of like boring and repetitive because they were Sonic bosses.
Right,
that's essentially
exactly
what they are. Although there was some kind of bio lizard, so... and then Eggman's egg machine, or what was that thing called?
Did you have to fight his mean bean machine?
I wish.
That would be a pretty amazing boss.
So it was pretty funny because we were talking about, I was playing the final boss right before we recorded, and he's the same boss, like the same character as the console one, which that was like the worst boss fight ever. Mm-hmm. But this one actually was like done better in a way because it made way more sense. Like you weren't confused the whole time about what was going on and what you're supposed to be doing, and you didn't have your stupid friends constantly yelling at you. This one had not a friend in sight other than Tails show up, which was nice. No Charmies or Blazes.
They weren't constantly saying, "Looks like a homing shot."
No, none of that was going on. So there's parts in the final boss where it's basically in this one, rather than you switching between the two, it does, depending on what part you're on. So it's like there's the parts where it's side-scrolling and you're dodging stuff, and then you know, rings will fly by occasionally so you can keep your being supersonic charged up. And then once you've dodged enough stuff, then he'll be like vulnerable for a second and you just use the homing shot. And then it switches to a 3D one where you're like flying around and dodging, like these little crosshair things will appear, and if you don't move really fast, then they'll like explode into this electricity stuff that'll slow you down. So you're basically just zooming the entire time to try and get up to him to do that attack, but it actually, like, you can kind of actually tell how far away he is and if you're getting closer and stuff, and you can actually tell when to attack, unlike the other one where you had no idea what was happening.
The other one, it was like you could know what to do, but whether or not it worked just felt really arbitrary and completely out of your control.
Yeah, this was more like, oh, you dodged enough stuff, I guess you get to hit me now.
It's like you'd be boosting both times, but sometimes you'd get closer to him and sometimes you just wouldn't.
Yeah,
and it seemed just really random.
Yeah, and this one was totally not like crazy like that at all, and I beat him in one try and stuff. So even like that boss wasn't that difficult. It was just a matter of being good at dodging things.
I'd rather take an easy end boss to a completely broken, nonsensical end boss.
Oh yeah, I know. And then, you know, that unlocked another challenge mission thingy, I guess, from beating it. But the weird thing is you get that homing thing as old Sonic, like, I think after the first set of stages. So once you're into the, like, Sonic Adventure era stuff. So it's like it even encourages you in the game to go back. And I'm wondering if you almost can't get those really good times until you have that or something, you know, because then you could maybe get to other paths or something. It just seemed weird because, like, even levels I thought I did okay on, I always got such a horrible score with them. It was really weird.
Huh.
So it definitely doesn't seem like it has as much. I mean, it definitely doesn't have as much content as far as, like, regular levels go. And then, you know, it has 100 missions that are the side mission things, which I'm not sure how many. The other one had a lot, but I don't know how many it had.
Mm-hmm. At least they had the good sense to actually, with the exception of Green Hill Zone, like, make different levels in this one, like, worlds-wise.
Yeah, I was very happy about that, and I really had wished they'd just ditch the Green Hill Zone, but they seem like maybe they're contractually obligated to.
I think they just really wanted to, because, you know, the whole thing's kind of a nostalgia trip anyway. I think that's, like, their main hook is, because, you know, Green Hill Zone's, like, the iconic Mario 1-1 style.
I was always so much more excited when I'd get to the later level and stuff, and like Marble Zone, and what's that one where you're like in space? I don't know. What is that one? I don't even remember.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
But yeah,
this one has a lot of weird names.
I always looked forward to the other levels more because Green Hill Zone, you can play anytime you want. You just turn it on and it's right there. So who cares?
Exactly.
Like, it's like playing 1-1 in Mario. Who cares? You can always play that level. Give me 5-3. I don't know. Just give me some random other level.
Right.
For a change.
But anyway, yeah, it was cool how they, you know, actually had like Casino Zone, like you mentioned, and you know, some of them, you said they even use different games. Like, they had a Sonic Rush level, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was like you were saying, it's almost like new Sonic, and this one was Dimp Sonic rather than the 3D Sonics, like traditional. So yeah, and that level was pretty fun. It was like the underwater temple or whatever, and it had the awesome song from the Jet Grind Radio guy, so that was cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, it has a good soundtrack. It's pretty fun, like, overall. I mean, it's just, if you're you know, a halfway decent gamer, you're probably going to blow through it in an afternoon if you really want to. You know, it's not going to be a challenge. It's just, it's kind of a fun nostalgia trip. And the fact that the levels, the new Sonic levels are still like 2.5D, it's like, that kind of made me like them better in a way, I think, than I might have otherwise. Cause I don't know. I'm just still not a fan of those normal 3D ones as much. So. But anyway, that's pretty much it for Generations.
All right. So yeah, Skyward Sword came out. I actually played it. Actually, I think it had been out for a bit before I actually started playing it. But yeah, it's really cool so far. I'm actually 4 dungeons in already. Because usually if I sit down to play it, I'm there for a while. but yeah, I mean it still has kind of the same like slow start like a Twilight Princess did. Didn't feel as slow in the beginning as Twilight Princess did, fortunately. But it still took me like a few hours before I was actually, you know, going into like the first dungeon and getting it more into the meat of the game. But yeah, as far as, you know, like the motion control combat and whatnot, I'm a big fan of that. It seems to be working really well so far. I don't know how much experience you have with it at this point. I know you've been playing
almost
it a bit too.
None. I well, here's the thing. Like, I know what happens when Brittany and I are both playing the same game. Usually, I end up not playing it, and she plays it a bunch because I'm like too nice to be like. I always feel like a jackass if I'm like, I want to play a game. You sit there and do nothing while I play this game, you know? So I'm always like, no, you can play. I'll read or something. And then I never play it. So with this, I'm like, okay, we're going to play this together, like old school style, because I had an epiphany. I have never finished a Zelda game since I stopped doing that.
Ah.
So, unfortunately, it's been a pretty busy several days since our copy came.
Right.
So we are to the point where I got the sword and I got my uniform, so I actually look like Link now. And we're supposed to go towards the first dungeon, which there's like essentially a level on the way, is my understanding.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting the way it's broken up, at least for the first set of dungeons. So you have the overworld, which is, you know, flying birds in the sky, which is kind of the replacement for Hyrule Field. I guess you could also compare it to like Wind Waker's ocean. But personally,
the ocean.
Oh man, that's so boring. But the controls definitely take some getting used to on the bird because they're pretty weird to jump into. I don't know. Have you controlled the bird yet?
I actually haven't controlled the bird. It was actually Brittany's turn on that, but I kind of got the gist of it because I was the one that was like, no, you need to do this to make him flap his wings. Like, I just got it from watching.
Right. Yeah, it takes a little bit to adjust to because it is a little weird. Like, you're, you know, it basically you're moving, you know, tilting the Wiimote to turn the bird, and, you know, you kind of control him like a hang glider. Like, you can angle him up, fly up, and then fly down to get a bunch of speed, and then you can flap while you're flying up to make it so that you can get up even faster. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're just kind of treating it like a hang glider where you're just kind of doing a lot of dive bombs and whatnot. But I find it far, far more interesting than like Wind Waker's Ocean, which I found super boring.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the draw distance is a lot farther. So you can actually see a lot of the floating islands in the distance and whatnot. So you always kind of feel like you're heading towards something meaningful. Also, they kind of speed things up by having, there's like little floating gate thingies that you can fly through to get like a super duper speed boost. So if you need to go a really long distance, you can hit, you know, one or two of those and it'll speed things up quite a bit. But yeah, anyway, back on the subject of kind of how it's broken up, as you progress, you kind of unlock these different breaks in the clouds that lead down to the surface world.
Okay.
And these are kind of like how, you know, Hyrule Field in the old games, like Hyrule Field would be connected to, like, say, Death Mountain, which would then be connected to, say, the Fire Temple.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very, very similar concept where, you know, there's a break in the clouds, you go down it, and then you're in this, you know, larger surface world area that, you know, is kind of more self-contained with the sky world kind of connecting all of those. And this is probably a little less true on the first one, but definitely becomes more true as you get to the other ones. They kind of feel like levels in themselves, because, you know, you're going down to these areas and kind of solving their own set of puzzles. Obviously, you're not going to run into, like, keys and whatnot, but, you know, you're going through these areas that seem to actually get increasingly larger. Like, you know, the first one is the woods, and, you know, it's not small, but
right.
It seems like each one that I got to was bigger than the last. And especially with the third dungeon, the whole part leading up to it seemed like I was on that for quite a while before I actually got into the dungeon. But what's cool about that is that, you know, these areas are, like I said, they're kind of like levels in themselves, and they're, you know, really interesting, and you usually get an item as well. So, like, you know, by the time you're through the dungeon, then you've gotten, like, two items at that point.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, yeah, that's all pretty cool. Without getting into any specifics, the third area especially does some really cool things that, like, it seemed like when you get to the third area, the creativity of it seems to go up, like, several notches, at least I think so, just because of some of the crazy ideas. Like, this is, without getting into specifics, this might be kind of hard to explain, but it almost, like, there was just one aspect that they introduced in that third area that almost seemed like a Mario Galaxy level of craziness. And I don't mean any specific thing that Mario Galaxy did. I just mean, like,
how that game was insane.
How that game was insane. Yeah, there was just one, like, specific thing, like, mechanic that's used throughout the whole third area and the third dungeon. Both of them use it. And it's just, when you get there, you'll know what I mean. And it's just like, you're just like, wow, this is actually a really cool idea. But yeah, one of the things I'm really enjoying about it is the upgrade system, which I guess you probably haven't really got to touch yet.
I saw it. I was like, hey, if I had more of these bugs, I could upgrade this wooden shield to a slightly less crappy wooden shield.
Well, the bugs are actually mostly used to enhance potions, actually.
Okay.
But yeah, as you fight all these monsters and stuff, you get different materials, and also from just kind of scavenging certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you can upgrade tons of different things. You get multiple shields, which all kind of have their own little purpose. Like, you know, you start off and you can get a wooden shield, and
right.
You know, obviously it's wood, so its disadvantage is that it can burn up. But then you get a metal shield, and its disadvantage is that if you're fighting electricity guys, I think it, like, if you try and block, it'll hurt you, or, you know, because it'll electrocute you, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, on top of having these various shields, which I got to a point where I actually unlocked a third one, but I couldn't afford it, there's an upgrade system to where, like, I don't know if it's the same for every shield, but the two shields that I have, there's, like, three levels of upgrading for these shields as well. And it's just, like, you just find, you know, those materials and a little bit of money, and you go into the, you know, the little shop area, and you can have them upgraded. And there's this whole shield durability system where if you're doing a shield counterattack, you're totally fine. But if you just have your shield out and people are wailing on it, you have a durability meter that will go down.
Mm.
So when you upgrade your shields, you can get that durability meter to be, like, way bigger. So I actually got to the point at this point where I maxed out both the wood and the iron shield. So, like, I have a pretty large durability meter for those now. But you can also upgrade, like, regular items, like the slingshot, for example. I was able to upgrade it so that it can, like, I can charge it up and shoot, like, a whole bunch of seeds at once, but still for the price of a single one.
Oh, crazy.
And then, you know, the little beetle thing that you've probably seen in pretty much all the promotional material and all the demos and whatnot, where, you know, you shoot this little beetle thing and you can fly it around with the Wiimote, and you know, you can get upgrades for that to, like, make it faster and to make it fly farther. So it's like, even non-combat, like, normal items, they have worked into this upgrade system. And, yeah, it's just a pretty interesting way to kind of, you know, add a little bit more depth to the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is the adventure pouch, which, like, again, I don't know how much you've dealt with it at this point. but where you store like your shield and whatnot and bottles.
It just gave me the adventurer bag or whatever, where it has four spots in it.
Right. So like stuff. So like for that, as you progress, you can get up to 8. I think I have 7 right now. But what's interesting about it is that and this little adventure pouch thing is a way that you can adapt, kind of adapt what you take with you to your play style. Like, as I am, you know, finding more and more secret chests, I'll find, like, a medallion that makes hearts appear more often in, like, pots and grass and stuff, but it takes up an adventure pouch slot.
Oh, okay.
And so, I can take that with me, but, you know, I only have, you have 4, I have 7 slots right now. So, you know, you can carry multiple shields with you, you can carry, you know, like in the other Zeldas, you could get, like, I'll expand how many bombs you can carry and things like mm-hmm. that. In these are expansions that take up a slot in your adventure pouch. So, like, you can buy a thing so you can carry more bombs, but then that's going to take one slot of your adventure pouch as well.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot of kind of customization with this adventure pouch to adapt to your playstyle or, you know, the situation, which, again, is it's cool because it's something that's not really been in any Zelda. So it's just kind of a cool idea that makes the equipment system seem a lot deeper.
Yeah, it feels like they did everything they could to make this one. You remember the press conference? They were talking about how it's like Nintendo was basically like, we get it. You want everything to be the same, but also different. So it sounds like that's exactly what they were trying to do with this.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, it still has a lot of, you know, Zelda formula stuff in it. Like, there's no doubt about that. That stuff's there, and, you know, I kind of like that it is. But they also, you know, added all these extra layers and things that have not been in other games to
exactly.
of, you know, evolve that established formula, which is pretty sweet.
I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the game so far. And
because even Twilight Princess, everyone would just, like, so many people, because they like to do that sort of thing, were just like, oh, it's just Ocarina of Time again. It's like, well, aren't they all just, you know, retelling a different version of the same idea with different levels and whatnot? I mean,
essentially, yeah. I mean, they're very formulaic for the most part.
But, I mean, is that necessarily a bad thing if you like these games? But, I don't know. This one just seems like it's taking it, adding enough to make it definitely feel like its own thing.
Yeah, it's one of those best of both worlds situations where they've kept enough to make it still very, very Zelda, but added enough to make it so that it has a lot of things that feel kind of fresh. But yeah, as far as like the kind of back on the one-to-one motion control stuff, you know what I did not expect to be so crazy addicting is the one-to-one bug catching.
Because I've not done that yet.
Basically, you can buy a bug net, and then when you whip it out, it is like how you have the Wii Motion Plus oriented is how the bug net is oriented. And just as you go through, you know, all these different areas, you'll just see various different kinds of bugs, and you kind of gotta sneak up on them, and, you know, otherwise they'll run away. You know, some of them are flying, some of them are on the ground, and just like, I don't know, something about you like doing this big important quest, and then off in the corner you're like, oh my god, there's some little dragonflies, I gotta go get them. And you just like slowly, you know, walk over there and try and sneak up on them, and, you know, do this whole one-to-one bug scooping thing. It's not like a mini game or anything. It's just like moving your sword around. It's just you take out the bug net as an item like you do any other item, and then you just try to scoop bugs up. But I don't know, there's something really strangely addicting about that system. Like, even if it's a bug that I know I already have a bunch of and is like kind of not really great for anything, like there's these butterflies that are just kind of, I mean, they have a purpose in that they signify something else is nearby, but they themselves don't really seem useful. But still, like, when I see them, I just kind of feel compelled to go get them just because I can.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just pretty amusing.
It's all the crazy how every game is based on Miyamoto having done things as a kid or something. Like, I used to collect bugs, or I used to go adventuring and like through the woods and or whatever. You know, all the games are just that essentially extrapolated.
Yeah.
And it's like he took all that and put it into this game. Now you can actually go collect the bugs.
Pretty much.
His dreams have been realized, finally.
Finally, the future of gaming. One-to-one bug collecting.
Exactly. But I was really surprised that the The thing with the sword was so early, like when you first get the sword. I thought that'd be like a big plot thing that
You mean when you specifically get the Skyward Sword?
Yeah, like I thought that would be later, and it's like the first thing.
Yeah,
it's
crazy. I mean, I like four dungeons in, I'm now to a point where you're, you know, kind of like powering it up essentially,
which is
something that happens in a lot of Zeldas. But yeah, it's not like Link to the Past or something where you have like a crap sword for, you know, for the first three dungeons until you actually get the Master Sword. It's
exactly.
Not like that.
Yeah, I was actually just really surprised at how quickly they're like, oh yeah, here's the sword.
And right.
That mysterious person on the cover, yeah, she's already in it.
Yeah.
And talks like GLaDOS, except in some crazy elf language.
Yeah, it sounds like weird auto-tuned gibberish.
It's very strange.
Yeah, it is very,
but
very
kind
strange.
Of addicting to listen to. Like, throw some beats behind that and you got yourself a sweet song.
Get yourself a musical stew going.
Exactly.
But yeah, the combat specifically, like, it's cool how many options you have, because, you know, obviously there's two different directions of horizontal slash, two different directions of vertical, four different directions of diagonals, that's the stab, you know, your jumping slash, all that. So it's like there are so many different kinds of slashes that you can do, but then at the same time, because it's one-to-one motion control, it's not like you have a bunch of controls to remember. So it's like, you know, you're fighting the Stalfos and he holds his swords a certain way and you know exactly how to do the exact kind of slash that you need to do to be able to hit him, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just like a really, really good use of motion control on the combat. And they are able to make some, you know, like there's a lot of enemies that are, you know, really easy to defeat. But even as early as the second dungeon, I got to, you know, kind of the reoccurring lizard man style character that's been in a lot of the Zelda games. And, you know, it wasn't even like really a mini boss or anything. It's just like a normal enemy that's around. I mean, there is like kind of a room that shuts you in where you have to fight two of them at once. But like those normal guys, they really kind of upped the ante on some of those. Like they were kind of kicking my ass. to the point where I actually almost died on just like one of those lizard guys. And I think it's really telling that when you start the game, they give you 6 hearts right off the bat.
Yeah.
They're like, here's 6 hearts. You're going to need them.
Yeah. I was one of the things I noticed right away. I'm like, wait a minute. I have twice as many hearts as I should. And then after talking to you, I was like, oh, sounds like that's a good thing.
Yeah. When you get to those lizard men, yeah, you're going to be really glad that you started the game with 6 hearts. It's funny, they're probably, like, I don't know, I was probably just being stupid to a certain extent, but I certainly don't recall any of the other 3D Zeldas having, like, normal enemies that have given me that much trouble.
Yeah. Well, on the whole, like, moving around thing, I don't know if you touched on this or not, because we've kind of been all over the place, but the whole, like, running and climbing and stuff.
Oh no!
The stamina bar. I didn't think you had. I just want to make sure we weren't retreading. But I was actually like found it on accident at first, because when I ran up to a wall, he like kind of did the climbing, like he tried to climb it and then jumped off, kind of like in games like Assassin's Creed or Uncharted or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's weird. And then like I immediately was, you know, kind of pulled into a tutorial, you know, because it was the intro of the game where it was showing me about that stuff. So like for things like running and doing your spin attack and climbing around on things, and you have this stamina meter that will tick down as you're doing all of those things. So the running and climbing and stuff, they actually worked it in as more of a real mechanic rather than it just been like jumping across and whatever. There's still no jump button,
right?
But I definitely felt like you had a little more control over it because of that. Like, they worked it in as a normal mechanic rather than just a, you know, there was just random things that you could run around and climb on, it seemed like.
It definitely seems like after playing Skyward Sword, it will be really hard to go back to other 3D Zelda games.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all of this kind of stuff that's been added. Like, the fact that if you're like, I want to get somewhere fast, you can just run like a normal person instead of constantly somersaulting like you would in any other other game.
Exactly.
And it's like you still can somersault. It's like, it's not like they took that away. It's just that you have an actual run button, so you can, you know, just move quickly like a normal person would do.
You can still do a million backflips if you really want to.
I love that, because I do enjoy doing a million backflips.
But yeah, it seemed, I don't know, it felt like he was more mobile, you know, like
for
he
sure,
moved
yeah.
more like a real person instead of a weirdo, you know, like you're saying, somersaulting everywhere.
Yeah, and even stuff like I was saying, you know, the shield stuff's a lot more complicated. Like, take something as simple as, you know, like the Octoroks shooting rocks at you.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that instead of just having your shield out, like in the old ones, if you just had your shield out and an Octorok hit you, it would just bounce and then hit them, right? In this,
right.
It's like you actually have to pull your shield out the second that the rock's going to hit, and then it will bounce it back. And if you just have it out, then it will hit it and take down shield durability.
Right.
So even something as simple as like the little Octorok guys, those extra layers that they've added to the combat make all those encounters just so much more interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, like when you're fighting bats and stuff, instead of feeling like you're just swinging wildly like a crazy person, you can just do a slash that slashes that direction, like either up or down. And that was the other thing, the picking up the pots, you can throw them or roll them, like they used the Wii bowling mechanic.
Oh, it gets better in the third place. The throwing them is almost, it's like there's these little basket things. It's like you're playing basketball.
Weird.
It's not actually set up in a way that, you know, aesthetically is like playing basketball.
Oh, no.
But just the fact that you're throwing a bowl or a bomb into a basket-like object to blow it up was quite amusing.
Yeah, as soon as I found out about the rolling thing, I pretty much did that with everything I could pick up.
Rolling bombs is awesome. Like, I love the ability to do that because, I don't know, there's a lot of times, maybe not like a ton, but there's a decent amount of times when, you know, there's something in front of you, you know, that's on the same like level ground as you that you want to get a bomb towards, and you don't want to necessarily be standing in the exact right spot to be able to throw them so it lands like right in front of them. You just do a bowling motion and then it rolls to their feet and blows up, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's all these little things that, like I said, it has a ton of different controls, but since it's just you doing the thing, you never forget any of them.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Like, you're just like, I want to bowl something, I do a bowling motion. There you go. You don't have to remember it was like, oh, you got to hold X and then hit. You know, it's none of that crap. So.
Yeah, exactly. All right, cool. Well, I think we should probably move on. I think the general consensus is it's really good.
Yeah, I will say after the first three dungeons, the pacing got a little worse before I got into the fourth. I saved so that I'm at the start of the fourth dungeon right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'd say the pacing definitely could have been tightened up a little between the sets of dungeons, like between the first three and the fourth. Because like the pacing of the first three dungeons, pretty tight, pretty brisk pace.
Mm-hmm.
Felt pretty good, I thought. But there's a few little things between dungeon three and four that are a little, there's definitely some filler in there. I'll just say that.
Yeah. Okay. Alrighty. Well, we're going to go at least one where we played together in our Let's Play Together segment. So we played co-op on a good chunk of Skylanders Spyro's Adventure. I actually, they were having all these crazy sales on it, because this game, it's the one where you have a copy of the game itself on either, actually it's for everything, PSP, or not PSP, that's like the only thing it isn't for, PS3, Wii, 360, and 3DS, and you get the game, and then it has a little portal. It's called the Portal of Power. And you sync that up with your console, and then you put these little, like, actual figurines on there, and then they're in the game. And it's Spyro and a bunch of other people, which is funny because
Spyro and his friends that they invented for this game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm no Spyro expert. I think I've only played maybe the first one. I honestly don't remember.
I know for sure that I played the first one, but everything else, I don't know. Like, I don't remember if I played multiple Spyro games or just the first one.
Yeah. So I actually ended up, because of all the crazy sales and having a bunch of rebates on my Amazon account, and I actually got the PS3 one and the 3DS one, because the 3DS one, they were having sales on all the figures and all that stuff. And they're cool figures. Like, I actually like collecting little figurines.
They're
anyway.
Surprisingly detailed.
And they're really detailed and they're really cool. I like the character designs because they're like just these cartoony, goofy looking dudes that I actually thought were really cool looking. So I got a bunch and I'm like, I hadn't even played the game yet, but everyone had the figures. Well, not everyone. A few of the places had the figures on sale for like $2 for $10, and they're normally $8 a piece. So I grabbed several of them while they were on sale, and I'm like, well, even if the game's not the greatest thing in the world, I mean, the figures are cool, so I'm collecting those, and I actually liked the game so far, but I did get the 3DS one and had the little portal didn't work, so I was asking around, like, did anyone else have this, like, problem? Because it uses the infrared to connect, you know, how the 3DS has the infrared on the back, and it was, like, not connecting at all, and I asked around, and I know at least Dally had played it from side questing, and he said he had no problems with it. It connected right away, so I'm like, okay, so mine must be defective. I tried resetting it, pulling the batteries out, you know, like resetting everything, starting the game over, and it was still like nothing. So then I tried it on Brittany's 3DS and still nothing. So I'm like, okay, this is clearly defective. So I was looking it up and I'm like, okay, it's under warranty, so you can go through the like official site for Activision, because they're who publishes it, and you know, they'll send you a replacement and yada yada, and it takes forever. And I'm like, well, let me look at Amazon's return policy. And it was like, well, it's eligible for return. So I did it through them. And the funny thing is, what they do is they just ship you a new copy. And then if you don't return the one that you have that's defective within 30 days, then they'll just charge you for the new one as well. So I'm like, well, that's cool, because that means I'll have the replacement like immediately, so I should have it in the next few days. But anyway, just kind of sucked because I wanted to be able to bounce the guys back and forth. So I'm waiting for that replacement to come, because I guess the 3DS version is more of a platformer game like the old Spyro
was. And that's what I thought the console one was until we played it.
Yeah, and it's not at all. It plays like a lot like Gauntlet.
Yeah, it's like Gauntlet with crazy, goofy, mythical beasts that you're controlling.
Mm-hmm. And they all have... I was actually pretty surprised that the characters actually felt a lot different than each other.
Yeah, they really do. Pretty much everyone that we tried, I mean, there are like a couple dragons that have like, you know, they might both have fly or something, but even in that, like, you know, there was the mecha dragon that had like a forced momentum glide, whereas like the dragons had more of a traditional, you know, fly and can hover and whatnot. So it's like,
right.
Even some of the abilities that are similar, they seem to have their own differences between the characters.
Yeah. So you go around and you are trying to restore this crazy super portal or something. It's the storyline is like a Saturday morning kids show or something. In fact, I am almost positive it's the guy that was Invader Zim is the bad guy. He sounds exactly like him. And it's super goofy and has lots of corny jokes in it and stuff. So I'm just like, you know, this was written for little kids, which is fine. I mean, that's who it's for. I think the age that it's like four ages, 6 to 9 or something like right
yeah.
there. So I was expecting something goofy. Actually, what's funny is one of the main reasons I got it was to play when my niece and nephew come over, because I'm always looking for something that's co-op so that they don't fight when they're playing it together as much. I mean, they still end up inevitably arguing and stuff, but. So it gave me a good excuse. Kids are a great excuse for getting this sort of thing, because then you don't feel like such a dork buying a game for kids.
Sure.
But I actually was having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I was having a surprising amount of fun with it, actually.
And it was like, you level up your characters, you collect money and experience, and then you can go upgrade your guys, and they start pretty simple. You know, you start with just like a basic attack, and or you start with two attacks, and then you can level those up, and you know, you'll get more attack, you know, stuff like, you know, health and whatnot. But all the characters, you know, have their basic stats. But then one of the things that I know I was finding addictive was you'd find these little side rooms, which you would have to switch to a certain element type guy, which is how they get you. We were always doing the ask your parents to buy you a Earth style guy so you can unlock this room.
That's pretty much what it's it's daring you to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, essentially, you cannot, I mean, you can't get 100% of the game without having bought a whole bunch of crap from them.
Having at least, you know, one character of every element.
Yeah, because, I mean, you go into these new areas in the level, and they're little side mission things where you go around and fight a bunch of guys, and at the end of them, you get a hat, and
oh, man.
The hats are hilarious, because you can have, like, every character wearing a cowboy hat, like we did for a while, or you can be wearing an anvil on your head, or a giant tiki mask.
Yeah, and it's like they all have, you know, all these different stats that they boost, but there's right. Occasionally you'll get one that you just like, stats be damned, I have to wear this fruit hat, this hat made of fruit.
Yes, the Chiquita Banana Lady hat. And how, like, my fish guy, I couldn't not be wearing the cowboy hat. Like, I don't even know what it does, but man, did he wear that cowboy hat like a pro. Because he is the guy that's, you know, wearing, like, carrying around a giant gun.
Well, once we got a jester hat and a beanie with a propeller, I had to wonder if the Cat in the Hat was next.
We have not found it yet, if it is there.
I can only hope that a hat as ridiculous as that will be the next one.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I was actually kind of surprised was that playing co-op, we weren't having too many issues with us both, like, trying to wander off opposite directions. It only happened occasionally, and it just kind of, when you get too far apart, it just won't let you go any farther, but it'll actually, like, show a visible tether so you can see where the other person is, like,
right.
Really quickly. So you can be like, oh, they're way over there, because you're usually not paying attention to the other character.
It just kind of gradually becomes visible as you get to the, you know, extreme, as far as apart as you can be. So
yeah, exactly. And then as you were leveling up the guys, then you got the third button would actually do stuff, which was cool. So usually that was like a mobility thing. Like you were saying, you could make it so like the dragons could actually fly rather than being just walking around. And then once you could fly, or if you used a water guy, there were like a lot of areas where there was water that you could normally not get across, that you could actually use those guys to get through. Or, you know, you could switch to water guys if you had them and get over there. So there's a little bit of exploration. Most of the levels felt pretty straightforward, although we didn't find 100% of everything in, I don't think, any level so far. Maybe one.
No, we did on a couple.
Yeah.
But, well, other than the finish the level in X amount of time, because we were always exploring every nook and cranny, so we never got that.
That's true. And then every time you've put a new character on for the first time, so basically every time you buy a new character and haven't loaded them up into the game, it unlocked a challenge room, which you have to be in single player to play. So I actually went back later and played a couple of those, and those are like actually fairly difficult, like timed levels. But the benefit of playing them is it'll actually permanently raise the stats for that character, depending on which level it is. So every character has a level, but you can play it with any character. So, you know, getting a bunch of characters basically just gives you a whole bunch of levels, and whatever ones you're actively playing with, you can then go through, and if you can beat them, you'll level up a specific stat. So it's not like your overall stats go up. It's like this one level will up your armor or something. But, you know, there's only so many stats, so there's several different characters with the same thing they'll level. And they were just hard enough to still be fun, but be challenging, you know? They weren't just, like, so super hard that they were frustrating.
You didn't the challenge stages still?
Yeah, but I didn't just, like, breeze through them either, so they actually did make you work for them a little bit, which is nice, because otherwise you could probably just go through a bunch of them and grind your stats up really high and totally break the game, because it's not that difficult anyway.
No, I mean, so far it's been a pretty easy game, but it's still, like, it's one of those ones I would never want to play single player, but just kind of, you know, as some very light co-op fun. You know, it's fun to go around as all these different characters and, you know, get new abilities as you level up. You know, there's mm-hmm. always something kind of satisfying about that.
Yeah.
I do wish they had four player, though. It caps out at two.
Yeah, no, I agree. The only thing, maybe gameplay things too, but the portal would have to definitely be bigger, because while it could currently fit four characters on it, there's actually like a couple like bonus levels that you can buy too that have to be on the portal to activate them. Mm-hmm. And there's also those same kits come with some like little items that you can put on the portal with them, and it'll give you like extra bonuses or something. So I'm guessing that's one of the reasons, because they didn't want the portal to be super giant to fit all that stuff.
I will say it's pretty cool how quick swapping out guys is. Like, I mean, you have this portal stand that the figure sits on, and then it's like, oh, I want to try this other guy, and you just like take it off the portal, put the other figure on, and bam, you're playing as the other guy. It's pretty quick. It's not like it has to be like loading other guy, you know, backing you out of anything. It's pretty snappy.
Yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised, and it looks nice, too. Like, the figures, you know, like we were saying, the actual figures look cool, and then, like, the in-game graphics match them, like, perfectly. Like, these goofy little dudes are in the exact world you would expect them to be in, you know?
These goofy little rainbow unicorns that shoot, unicorn dragons that shoot rainbows.
Exactly. That was the one I used a lot. And then you got, what is that guy's name? Warburton, like, doing the voice of some goofy pilot guy. So,
yeah,
you got that going on. And, man, do those characters ham it up.
Yeah.
Like I was saying, that part of it definitely feels like a goofy, like, really cheesy kids cartoon, like Saturday morning cartoon or something. Well, I don't know if Saturday morning cartoons even exist anymore, honestly. But
who can say?
I don't think they do. But anyway, yeah, it's actually pretty good. The only downside is that it's such a big, like, cost investment. That's, like, the main reason I wouldn't recommend it to most people, is because it's, like, it's fun, but it's kind of a commitment. So unless you're already also into collecting figurines or something, I don't know. It just seems like a big commitment for that.
Yeah, because especially, I mean, like you said, you got most of your stuff on crazy sales.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, if you were buying that stuff at its, like, normal retail price, that'd be crazy expensive.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, I could not justify it if I had been paying full price. And even, like, I went to Toys R Us on Black Friday, but I didn't go till like 8:30 at night. And they had been, it's funny because they had a section in the game, like the video game section, it was completely cleared out. Like, it had a few things left, but then they had another section when you first walk in, kind of off to the side. And that one had, like, not even been touched, because, like, I don't think most people knew it was there.
Yeah.
But they were even cheaper. They were like 2 for $1. So it made them basically 2 for $8 instead of 2 for $10. And I was, even then I was like, I've already bought so many of these figures and I think I'm done. At least until I give in and buy, like, the actual level expansion, maybe, if I'm still liking it enough to do that. But that does have the crazy shark guy that is pretty cool looking, so there's that factor. And it's a pirate ship, so I might give in and get that one at some point. But
time will tell.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing it with my nephew. He's supposed to be coming over in a few weeks and seeing what he thinks of it. Because when he walked in, they, like, happened to be dropping off Korra, and he walked in, he's like, wait a minute, do you just put the guy on the thing and then he's in the game? I'm like, yeah. He's like, that's awesome.
So, this is the same nephew that was, Shadow's my favorite.
Yeah,
character.
Well, he's the age where Shadow's his favorite. So
he's going to ask you if you have a Shadow figurine to put on it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, well, there is the nicknaming the characters. And so Spyro the Hedgehog was
Spyro's
the
Hedge.
Yeah, Hedgehog wouldn't fit, but... And apparently there's other connectivity, like you can actually, like every figure has a unique code and you can bring them online, like to some, like their site, and there's all these mini games and stuff you can play, I guess. So there's actually, like, even more you can do. So they actually are trying to make you get your money's worth out of buying the figures, I guess. Like, I gotta give them that. They're not, you know, they're trying to make it, have as much to it as it can. So I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's about it for that. Alrighty, well, I think that'll wrap it up for this week. So don't forget to check out the main site, wingdamage.com. And you can email the show at podcast@wingdamage.com. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wingdamage. And our personal ones are minus Spambot, and Jesse is Mainfinger. And with that, we will see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Barrel Roll. For more information, visit wingdamage.com.
Do a barrel roll!